Oh yeah, baby. Today is your day. Time to get out there on the run, and have tons of fun. You're listening to Early Call Time. Oh yeah.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to another episode of Early Call Time, the podcast where we discuss issues and news in the road race industry and get to know some of the people who keep it running. My name is Eli Ash, and I'm joined today, as always, by my co-host, Tony Yamanaka. Hey there, buddy. Happy almost New Year.
Happy almost New Year. How's it going?
It is going well. 2020 is almost behind us. The Electoral College has voted, so things are going okay. Really looking forward to doing this year-end wrap-up episode with you, and then really looking forward to, not necessarily looking forward to like January 1, 2021 or January 20, 2021. It's not like the world all of a sudden, you know, we snap our fingers and everything gets better. But we have almost made it through 2020. And that, I think, is something worth celebrating. And the podcast has made it through 2020. You know, we started this thing, obviously, like when you start most new things, not really knowing how much work it would be. And then we discovered how much work it is, and we still kept fucking doing it. So congrats, buddy. This is when I think we should add like the, you know, let's make more work for you in post by requesting that we add like a cheers champagne glasses clinking sound effect.
I think we can make that happen right now.
Come on, everybody. Sing it loud.
Okay, nice. That's probably enough room. Yeah, probably.
Otherwise, we're going to have a really awkward pause very early in the episode. In our stats on our dashboard, we'll just see a drop off as we get to the awkward 7-second pause, 2% of the way into the episode or something. Cool. But we do have some ground that we wanted to cover this week, talking a little bit about the news in the industry, as always, before we look back a little bit on the year and talk about some things we learned and then look forward a little bit to 2021. So, of course, you know, on the topics that we sort of are in the have to cover ground, I don't know whether we have any huge commentary on it, but just noting we did discuss Rebuild NYRR and their call for change in leadership of the organization. And we have now seen that at New York Roadrunners. There was, you know, obviously some sort of agreement reached, and the CEO, God, I'm drawing a blank on his name. Michael Caparasso is going to be leaving at the end of the year. And that's obviously something where we said, you know, this is something that regardless of whether this, you know, any specific change happens, it's something that needs to be taken seriously if we want to be the industry that we say we are. And this is certainly a sign of the leadership of that organization taking it seriously. Some other senior leaders, I believe, are also leaving. Whether it's related or not, who knows? But it seems like a lot of things right now really would be related. There are some calls for additional reform. There's hiring for a senior DEI level position. So as tough as it is to, like, you know, hear these things about an organization that's such a leader in the industry, it's really important that we hear these things and then actually listen and respond. And I don't think you and I get to be like the arbiters. Well, I know you and I don't get to be the arbiters of whether this is a good response that adequately does that or not. But I will say, like, I certainly think a lot of folks seem to believe that this is a good start, and it certainly is responsive. If you're saying you're going to hear some things and you want to hear it and are, you then have to actually act on what you hear to show that you've heard it. These are actions. So as hard as it is to hear this stuff about an industry leader who, like I said previously, has done a lot of good in the industry and outside of the industry and its community as well, it's important to hear these things and try and move the ball forward. And I think we're seeing some steps towards that. So I don't know that that's champagne clink sound effect worthy either. It's sad that we have to have these discussions, but we do have to have them. And moving the ball forward is what, to me, from the outside, I'm seeing here as well. So there's that. Anything on that tone that you want to make sure? Or is this something where it's like, no, let's edit this out. Let's stop discussing New York Roadrunners. They're the 800-pound gorilla in the industry. And someday there might be a contract there. So no,
I think it's always worth discussing. I mean, I don't have anything to add to it, but I think ignoring it is worse than acknowledging it and bringing it up. And even if it is this, you know, juggernaut in the industry or leader, it still has to be talked about, you know, and more often than not, they're the ones that are constantly under the spotlight. So they're typically the ones that are capable and responsible for kind of falling on the sword for the industry at large. So that's kind of the deal, right? It kind of comes with the size and the success and the scale of what they do. It's got another side to the coin, and that's kind of being the ones that inevitably, I guess, pay the piper initially before everyone else kind of makes way.
Yep. No, and I'll just be really interested to see, you know, any sort of restructuring that does happen to their senior leadership team. If this is something that we agree is key to the success of, well, I mean, not just like the organization or the industry, but like society going forward, I think we're going to have to see some restructuring. And like I said, the addition of a senior level DEI position, diversity, equity, and inclusion, by the way, when I say DEI for anyone who doesn't do acronym. And then, you know, seeing what the mandate that, you know, a new permanent CEO, right now there's an interim CEO, ultimately enters with. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. And hopefully, again, what we see there is continued progress. Outside of that, Tone, something that we have talked about a little bit is events slowly returning. And I'm going to toot my own horn a little bit here. I called mid-major events in the Sun Belt throughout the winter. And we recently saw the Space Coast Marathon happened in Florida. The BCS Marathon, which we had talked about, actually did end up having to cancel in Texas recently. But we still have events in Mississippi, I believe, also took place in Louisiana coming up. These mid-sized, couple thousand folks combined, 2,000 to 3,000 person events. And again, we saw some of those this past weekend. We saw Des Linden and an elite field race in a race in Mississippi. And we also saw, I believe, a large-scale triathlon, the challenge event at the Daytona Racetrack, which racetracks are a really interesting venue for these sort of events, able to control them, be enclosed, but have these large roadway-like loops, also kind of a cool thing to get to run on a racetrack that we saw happen. And I think what we're looking for is everyone who returns as an event, like, we want you to have a safe and successful event. And I think that's where we are, is these events have happened and we've got to be monitoring to see if we have any lessons learned from them and whether they were safe and successful. And I think we're all rooting for them to prove to have been so that we can potentially, you know, keep progressing once we get into the spring, once we get through, of course. Like, it's really part of the reason we thought these events were going to happen in Sunbelt states is because those states are acting as if there's not a pandemic going on. And so they're allowing these large scale things to happen. You know, despite being in, you know, an obvious spike right now where things are really rough in a lot of different places, these events are happening now. Hopefully they do go well. And then once we get out of this spike, more states may be willing to loosen the reins a little bit and say, all right, let's return to something larger than these 250 or small pod size events when it's safe at some point in the spring. So excited to have seen those races happen and looking forward to hopefully hearing that they were a success, which I think you're the one who said this before, Tony. It's like, we might not be able to declare that immediately, but we've got to monitor the situation on the ground and see whether there is anything that is traced back to those events.
Right. And the question is, given the state of the world and the pandemic in general, could you even really trace it back? Like, they're kind of already... they're throwing a cup of water into the ocean, in a sense. Does that make sense? Like, hey, it's already really bad. It's like, okay, well, you guys are allowed to have events because we also have our bars open, which makes absolutely no sense to me. I think one thing we haven't touched on, Eli, that's frustrating me from both an industry side, but a consumer side, is races that still have, or up until like 2 weeks ago, still had registration open for like December events or January events. And I don't understand how you can responsibly do that at this point. I think Rock and Roll Nashville, maybe? I think
they were late, like, cancellation.
Like, the day before, I think, right? Like,
They were late. I think so.
I don't understand it at all.
So I think what's happening in some of these cases is events know as much as the officials in the area. And the events are looking for the officials to say no, and the officials are looking for the events to say no. And some of the time, no one says no until it gets to the absolute last second when the officials are like, wait, we really can't be allowing this to happen. Whereas all along, it's been this little dance of being in the room and saying, well, here's what we're going to do. Well, okay. Here's what we're going to do. Well, okay. And then you get to the point where it's, here's a specific plan that has congealed in a specific environment. And then someone on the public official side, who maybe hasn't even been in the discussion up to that point, maybe it's floated up the org chart a little bit, goes, wait, no. and the plug gets pulled. That's actually kind of what I'm assuming is happening in any of these circumstances, is we're looking at these organizations that were used to giving us, like, you know, there may be frustrations dealing with municipalities and permitting bodies, and but they're clear, at least. Here is the expectation. And right now we're saying, well, here is the clear expectation. We're being given the go, but it's actually not clear to them. And then they get to a point where they realize, despite the fact that they've allowed it to be a go until a certain amount, a certain, you know, time close to the race or a certain threshold is hit, they then go, wait, we just can't do this. The cynical flip side of the coin is some of these races are just staying open for cash flow purposes to get the money now. I don't think that's necessarily the case across the board, although I wouldn't be shocked if there were certain cases where that is true. I think what is more likely is that events are moving forward acting in good faith and public officials are moving forward acting in good faith. But when the rubber ultimately meets the road, in some places that is later than we would want it to be, the plug is pulled on the public officials' side.
Sure. For a race in like April, but could you responsibly and realistically think you're going to put something on in December of 2020 or even January 2021? I think that's like a resounding no. And my concern, my analogy there, it's like it's, say, the city and then the event organizer playing a game of chicken in their cars, but they're not cars, they're school buses full of participants. And then the only people that have time to bail out are the drivers. And then everyone else is left in the car. So, like, yeah, oh, we're pulling the plug, sorry. But what if you were traveling to Nashville? What if you had booked a hotel? What if you had plane tickets? You get what I'm saying? Like, I just don't see how you can responsibly keep registration open right now for anything more than like a local, you know, sub 250 person event. It just doesn't make sense to me.
The reason being that I think we all have enough case studies now of these cancellations that have had to happen late that we know it's possible, even if we have that good faith working relationship with our local officials. And so, yeah, I wouldn't feel good about, well, one, I wouldn't feel good about encouraging anyone to travel right now. That's, you know, I'm not traveling for the holidays or anything like that.
Right.
Hey, come to our event, come to the Twin Cities from all over the upper Midwest or the country. No, that's not something I want to be saying. While we're putting on events, it's, you know, smaller events. And then two, just what you said, that investment of someone traveling, someone buying the tickets, the hotel room, someone coming there. Well, that late cancellation really hoses that person. And we've seen enough examples of people thinking they're going to be able to happen and then having a late cancellation.
Right.
That encouraging that level of investment isn't something that I would feel good about doing.
That's
right
the
now.
Part that's like really making me angry. It's by rolling the dice and saying we're keeping registration open for this December event, now what they're creating is a lack of trust, or I guess a creation of distrust in a race. So if they register for something else in the future, they're going to be like, well, last time I did this, even if they're not at all affiliated or associated, it's like, well, they canceled the race on me the day before. So now you're kind of leaving a bad taste in people's mouths where... And I'm not saying this is happening in a rampant way where it's becoming a massive issue, but it's something to keep an eye on, in my opinion. We're almost rubber banding back into this towing the line again. So it's this bell curve of risk that the race industry has taken where it was, we're not canceling. Wow, it's really bad. Everything is canceled. And now it's like, let's set a date for April. Let's set a date for whatever it may be. And let's open reg again. So are we basically rubber banding back into this open reg? Sorry, we're canceled a little bit. I think there's a panel going on later this week with Jenna Olson. I think it's through Running USA, but they're basically going to talk about how you structure your registration to have, I guess, trust from the consumer so they know that they're covered in a sense and the race is covered as well, which is a whole other topic. But I think to me, it's the more egregious ones that are really, really rubbing me the wrong way. There's two here in Texas that both were scheduled to take place in December. I don't know what happened with one of them, but the other one switched venues. Open Reg, it's a half marathon. They listed it at $125 for the notoriously most Spartan bear half marathon that I've ever seen in my life. And at the very, very, very bottom in fine print, it said, hey, we actually like don't have our permit yet and we may cancel. It's like, well, like, why is your reg open? Why did you say you switch venues to make it look like you got approved somewhere else? And like, why are you A, charging that much, and B, even considering doing this, knowing that it's not even responsible, even if you do get your permit, really, not at that scale. So yeah, that's the part that's making me angry. Good.
No, that sort of thing. And I will say, I think right now, regardless of when you're opening for, whether it's late spring, summer, fall, like your ethical obligation is to acknowledge that we are in this environment right now where things are not certain. That's the first part. And second, to make clear to your consumers what will happen if you are canceled. Like, yep. You have to say, here is our make good. And your make good doesn't have to be a full refund. Not every race can afford that. Not every organization can afford that. That's fine. Your make good doesn't have to be a full deferral to the next year. Not every race can afford that. Not every organization can afford that. That's fine. Your make good has to be clear. Your consumer has to know what they're getting into. And if you tell them up front, like, I actually think someone who did this really well is Grandma's. And they didn't do full refund or full deferral. They built kind of a complex system of, here are a series of comps downrange over 5 years that you would be able to have up to three of, and not comps, excuse me, like substantial discounts. And this is how we'll make you whole. They weren't saying, hey, here's your money back. But what they did is built something that works for their organization. And then when they opened Reg, it was like the co-headliner. It was, we are open and here is our policy. And so on their website, it's right there. Here is our policy. It's not buried somewhere. It is clear. So someone who goes in is going in eyes wide open. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're at a time of year in June where, like, yeah, who knows? And here in Minnesota, things are, you know, tighter than in those Sunbelt states. But what they're saying is, look, we want to put on this race for you. Here are one, our restrictions on field size. And two, if for some reason we're not able to do this, what we will do for you. We would love to put this on for you. Come register. And they've done pretty well in registration with their limited field size events. And I think it will be hard if they do have to cancel. Again, they're at a time of year where here in Minnesota, you know, knife's edge maybe. But what they have done so well is say, look, if you are going to register, here is the full set of information. You're making an informed decision. And it's not that you're getting your full money back. It's this series of codes downrange. And kudos to them and kudos to other folks who have opened and been clear about the status of their event and what they will do for folks. And once you've done that, you have met your ethical obligation, and not just your ethical obligation. Also, I think to your point, built like this relationship of trust where someone isn't going to be surprised and burned and never come back to you ever again. Like, you know, fulfilling this ethical obligation also has an element of self-interest to it. If they have to make an adjustment to their event, they've told folks, hey, here is our policy if we do have to cancel. And that has at least been communicated up front to them.
Yeah. I mean, I think just long story short, it seems very short-sighted to operate the way I'm seeing some folks operate, because they're basically just kind of burning themselves unless it goes perfectly. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. It's not reasonable. It's not honest, and it's definitely not transparent. And being in the industry, I know like what's feasible. Like, I know there's 0% chance that you can produce, you know, a half marathon this month responsibly with a scale bigger than, say, 500 people. You know what I mean? If you just had a club,
your local scale event, your club running local scale
event. You could do feats and stuff like that. But like, just looking at a lack of a course map, looking at the venue, knowing the event date, and then the history of that event, then looking at what it costs, the projected like event date, I was like, there's just absolutely no way it's going to happen. And then knowing the city on top of that, and that it falls within city limits, it's like, there's not a chance like this is happening. Like, how can they responsibly have this race up? And it just made me really, really angry, clearly. And it's still, I'm still angry about it. Just because it's like, dude, I'd love to go out and like make money right now. I just can't find a way to do it without feeling like I'm misleading someone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In that sense. No. And it's just frustrating to see other folks do it, or even like a lot of rogue running here in Austin, and I'm not referring to that, but like rogue events that they're like, oh, we're the brewery run, we'll set up this structure and like go out, and there's no marked course, so please stay on the sidewalk. It's like, that's not how, like, that's not a 5k, but you're making 5k money without any of the 5k expenses, which is police, traffic closures, safety, medical, because you basically just like skirted the rules. Now it's like a post-race party at a brewery that people happen to run to and from. It's just like, I'm just tired of these loopholes, man.
Yeah. No. And what's funny is we're going to transition from that to talking about an event that is happening that we're excited for. And it almost blurs the lines, and it speaks to, like, you know, my I'm going to say famous line of, you know, every race is a snowflake, like the circumstances around it are different. But like, I mean, I'm going to admit that I've seen some people say some things about this event, about how it's ethically fraught for like folks to be like traveling to it right now. And, you know, I'm not, you know, in the boat where I'm like, oh yeah, let's be, you know, blind to these concerns. Let's take these concerns into consideration. But it's the Marathon Project, which is happening this upcoming weekend, and let's be clear, has folks traveling to it from all over North America, actually, not mass numbers of folks. They've controlled the size. It's a field of just over 100, I believe, men's and women's elite marathon, happening in a private facility on reservation land in Arizona. And I do feel it's a little different too when you have to like assess, like, in an environment where, you know, every other developed nation in the world has been giving its citizens monies every month. And in America, we got $1,200 at the beginning of the pandemic. And then it's like, and you're on your own. Mitch McConnell says, peace out. For folks who, you know, these pros are traveling, and we talked with Matt, who is producing the event a couple episodes ago, about, you know, the goal being for them to hit contractual goals, to earn some prize money, do some of those things. And, you know, I think it does get really fraught when you haven't served a population well during a pandemic. People like need to, whether it's run a marathon, if that is their job, or return to serving food at a restaurant, if that's their job, because they need to make a living, and they're not being taken care of by a government that has an ethical obligation to its citizens that it isn't fulfilling. So all of those ethical ambiguities being considered, I am, despite that, really excited to see elite pro level racing. I think they've got pace groups set out for the men at like 209 something and 211 something, and for women in the low 220s, to get to watch, you know, pro marathoning this weekend. And it's happened internationally in some places where the environment's been better. There were some records recently set, you know, in Valencia for marathon and half marathon distance as well. But we're really excited, I think, about the Marathon Project. But again, I think that excitement is to some degree tempered by the environment in which we are all existing, and the understanding that almost anything that does go forward, wherever you draw the line, some people are going to say, well, that might be a little too far. Or some folks, you know, might say, well, you know, you could do X, Y, or Z more. But despite that, I think we do have excitement for the Marathon Project happening this weekend. And I will say, too, folks who listen to the pod got the inside scoop. Matt broke news about the race is going to be broadcast on USATF.TV on a pay basis, and the NBC Sports Network on tape delay as well. And Matt, if you're a podcast listener, you knew that before the public. So just another reason to listen to the ECT pod.
It's true. What a huge leak. It's our the feather in our cap. We made it.
Yeah. Clink again.
No, I'm excited. And I think, to me, that's more of like, you're watching a sporting event. You know what I mean? That you're not, it's not necessarily open to the public. We're not talking about thousands of people. It's curated. It's small. This is more akin to like the NBA bubble. You know what I mean? Then
definitely.
Anything else in my eyes, it's controlled, it's manageable. They're doing COVID testing, strict guidelines. Like, it's a thing that they're doing. They're not relying on people to be honest and responsible, which I think is the thing that's gotten us where we are, is that both of those things can't be 100%. you know, across the population. We can't expect everyone to be responsible. And it's also very difficult to get upset at stuff when you turn around and at least here in Austin, like the bars are open because you get like French fries with your beer that are is mandatory as part of your order. So like the loophole system is just insane. Very disheartening. But I don't think that applies to the Marathon Project. I think to me, that's a professional sport. It's being controlled. It's being managed like one. So two totally different things, in my opinion.
Yeah. It's definitely not like the college football thing, too, where it's like fans in the stadium. And oh, by the way, these people, this isn't a professional sport. This is amateur. It's like, well, no, it's not amateur. You're putting this on for you to make money. Just the players can't. These are folks
so
who are saying,
bananas.
Yeah, these are folks who are choosing to go run this race as professionals to get paid. And I mean, I don't think there's anything you can do, but, you know, respect that folks are in a hard situation right now. And if they are choosing because it is how they make their living to go run a race, that is a choice that they, you know, get to make, and that this is a race that is clearly being done in a fashion that is as responsible as it can be done for an event that has folks traveling to it. And it's not open to you and me. It's not you and me, mass Joe public going in. They've got a virtual event. You can register for that if you want to be a part of it and support it. Help Matt and Josh and Ben not lose their shirts to put this event on. And hopefully they won't be losing their shirts. They also, in addition to TV, recently announced Brooks as well as a partner in the event. So hopefully this is a successful event. People perform well. These pros get that paper. And the event is one that is safe and successful, and maybe we'll get to have nice things again like this at some point in the future. Tone, is there anything else you want to cover before we dive in a little bit about, I think what we sort of wanted to end the episode with is, you know, this is our final episode of the year, and we wanted to end with what did we learn this year and what do we hope for the next year? But before we dive into that, is there anything else you would want to cover?
No, let's keep on moving.
All right. So I kind of prepared three things. I don't know if you prepared anything, you know, whether three or a specific number of bullets or anything like that. So if you want, we can go back and forth, or we can kind of each run down our list of what we learned. What works best for you for that? Do you have a list?
I think you should definitely go first.
So you're really prepared for this is what I'm hearing.
I'm gonna
run a stall for you for a little bit right now. Not a huge one, but like, this is going to be what did we learn this year? These should be in the industry things we learned. Like, this isn't like, well, our democracy is teetering.
These are details that are crucial when you send me the show notes. It literally just says, what did you learn this year? It's like, great. So thanks for being super specific.
Yeah. And then beyond that, I'm not going to share like my personal, like, oh, like I learned that moving during a pandemic is really hard. I'm going to, or Prozac works for dogs. I'm not going to do the personal. I have, which by the way, it does. If any of you have noticed fewer dogs barking in the background, one, we've settled into a routine a little bit, but two, man, Prozac is a wonder drug. Although it's expensive, we're considering committing insurance fraud and getting a prescription for ourselves so it would be cheaper for our dogs.
Oh, no.
And I mean, let's be clear.
I'm
going to
be involved in like the deposition because I'm like, I heard you say that.
Yeah. But anyway, so I'll start and I'll go with one thing that I learned in the industry is we have always said that running is recession proof. And I actually think that has proven to be true. Running is recession proof. But what we have found is that wasn't specific enough to the events industry, because while running is recession proof, racing isn't necessarily, or if that recession is tied to something like a global pandemic that makes it inherently difficult to have mass gatherings while running may be fully recession proof. And we have seen so many studies and surveys coming out saying more folks are running, more folks are doing things for their own personal fitness. Racing is not all forms of recession proof when racing relies on large scale mass gatherings. So I think that's a major lesson learned is choosing your words matters, specific language matters. And in this case, this specific language, which we always said in the industry, doesn't cover all our bases and didn't prove to be something that actually mattered this year when we all had to cancel large scale gatherings and have only been able to return at the absolute largest scale at this medium scale size and much more and thus small, purely local size. So I think that's a major lesson learned this year. Any thoughts on that, Tone?
I agree. I mean, it's...
But not entirely, it sounds like.
No, I mean, it's just hard to anticipate. Yeah, I mean, when you say, like, choose your words or be more specific, it's... I 100% agree where you're coming from, but this was borderline, not impossible to prepare for, but, you know, not reasonable to expect. Let's put it that way. It was far more reasonable to go into another, like, full economic meltdown than it was to say we're going to go into a pandemic where we can't, like, talk to each other. There was a really good SNL skit, I think it was last Saturday, of like a fortune teller, and she just describes like some of the stuff. She's like, I see you spraying a bag of Doritos with soap in your kitchen. And then she like ends it, and like, wait, why am I spraying a bag of Doritos down with soap? You know, it's, there's like just some stuff that if you take it out of context and just don't say that it's COVID or a pandemic and you just describe some of the stuff that we're having to do, it's comical. Like, clearly it's very, very funny if you think of some of the stuff. You know, it's like, oh, I saw my neighbor yesterday. I hope I didn't catch it. It's like, wait, what do you mean? Hope you didn't catch what? You know, if you just like leave it out of context and the stuff that goes through your head, it is. And it's unpredictable that you would have to take the steps that we've taken to basically stay healthy up to this point. What I will say, and I think some of the things that, one of the things that I could say that we learned this year that piggybacks on yours, Eli, is we need to constantly be evolving, even if it's working as it currently is. So a lot of that, I think, in our industry right now is particular to technology. I feel like we've been in this blockbuster brick and mortar mentality for a lot of years in the printing industry. And yes, we have fought like the Netflix model tooth and nails for a long, long time. And this was almost our industry's way of saying, like, either evolve, adapt, adopt technology and get better at all this, or you will go out of business within the year. And it's happening like left and right. It's constantly happening right now because maybe the infrastructure isn't there to adopt the technology, the desire isn't there, or just, I don't know what it is, but what I learned is like you have to keep making it better to some degree, or at least exploring different solutions or being capable of implementing them. You can't just say we've always done it this way. Not that that's a lesson for this year, but I think you get what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, no, I think it's a lesson driven home by this year. And I will say that actually ties a little bit to something that I had on here, and in like the blockbuster Netflix mentality sort of metaphor that you were drawing there. There were people who were already doing these new and good things, virtual, at scale, you know, in some cases. And we, as Blockbuster, were going, ah, this Netflix thing, it isn't going to, you know, take off or whatever. And I think we were just getting to the point where we were saying, even before the pandemic, well, there are elements of this that we really like that we can utilize as a yes and to what we're doing. And we're maybe getting ready to dip our toe in the water. And I think because a lot of folks were just getting ready to dip their toe in the water, and then all of a sudden we're just like plunged into the deep end by the pandemic, what we found is what I think we would have found even by dipping our toe in the water, is that it's a whole different business. Like, you've spoken a few times this year, Tony, about running TDC, the Texas Distance Challenge, one of the big successful virtual events this year, and how much work it is and how different it is and the types of things that go into it and the types of skills that are needed, and that you had to, you know, build this virtual platform to do this thing, to do what you wanted to do, and develop these new types of partnerships and ways you were going to put content out there in the world. And so I guess maybe this is one of those things. A line about the pandemic has been everyone is being forced to get where they were going to go, but faster. Is we're being forced to get where we're going to go faster. And what that means is, as businesses, we're going to have to evolve to have these technical capabilities that maybe may not have existed in-house or existed only minimally in-house, or were something that were farmed out, you know, to, hey, we need you to build this template thing that we're then going to wash, rinse, repeat. And I think we as an industry are likely going to see, you know, some new positions created at organizations, folks responsible for these virtual events, having the technical skills and expertise and SEO, you know, all these different elements that really, okay, yeah, our toe is in the water, really have to be fully immersed into what we do for us as an industry to be the best version of ourselves and to be successful in this new, what will continue to be a hybrid environment for some period of time, and can and should continue to be a hybrid environment to offer, you know, our services to new groups of people for the foreseeable future going forward. So yeah, I think a big lesson learned is that virtual is a different skill set, and we're going to need to see some evolution of some tentpole organizations in order to facilitate that properly.
Yeah, the one thing I'm hoping there is that it doesn't ruin the community aspect of what we have in the industry. So right now there's what I consider to be a lot of respect for one another across different markets. So say someone wouldn't necessarily go into the Dallas market without talking to Dallas Marathon. I wouldn't go and do something in California without talking to JT. You know, you kind of go into these markets where these operators are and you know them well enough where they're your friends, and you don't really want to like compete against them. If anything, you want to collaborate with them. What I'm concerned about, and we're seeing a little bit in the virtual space, especially when you mentioned SEO, is that there is a lot of, I mean, it's
carpet bagging. Call it. Channel your inner Clemens. Dude, it's carpet bagging.
It's capitalism, and it's legal, and it's okay, but it definitely goes against like the spirit of our industry. And one of the things that I'm sure you saw pop up is Turkey Trot, for example. So someone that is computer savvy, understands SEO, basically created a city Turkey Trot, Austin Turkey Trot, Sacramento Turkey Trot as a virtual event. It was run through Eventbrite, which is smart because Eventbrite basically has fantastic SEO and results as it exists. And it's kind of crushing those events that were supposed to happen in those cities because everything is virtual. So now when you're looking for Thundercloud Turkey Trot, but you see Austin Turkey Trot and you're kind of a novice and this is something you want to do, you're going to sign up for one thinking it's the other. And that happened. And that's my biggest concern right now is it's not complaining. Like, I can't keep up with the tech and the SEO. It's like, of course you can. You hire someone that can do it, or you learn to do it. It's not terribly difficult. But to me, it's more of the honesty, the camaraderie, and then the community within the industry that I think may get a little fragmented or damaged to some degree with lumping in the virtual aspect of this, because there is this ability to make money from anywhere and your market is everywhere. So it's, I don't know. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. I mean, what you're saying is someone is able to, and so what you're not saying, I want to make sure I understand this right, and our listeners do too, is that someone doesn't have a right to put on a virtual event. Everyone has a right to put on a virtual event. Like, that we're here first as in-person runners doesn't give us any right to go, it's BS that someone else is putting on an event.
Totally.
Now, I think what you are saying, though, is there is an ethical way to put on a virtual event. And a thing that can be done unethically is, it's not even if you're headquartered somewhere and you have, I'm, you know, headquartered in Minneapolis and I put on the Austin virtual 5K. Well, let's say I have a local tie to that community. It's that I am benefiting Austin Pets Alive, and I previously lived in Austin and I have some training groups that were looking for a goal and I've worked with them. Hey, like, you know, we want to put on this virtual event. It'll benefit animal welfare charities here in Austin. Like, if you can develop an authentic tie to the community, your virtual event, which, like you said, people can take part in from anywhere, can be tied to a community. But if your virtual event doesn't have an authentic tie to a community, it's unethical to put that community's name in the name or the SEO for your event. And we saw this, like you said, the Turkey Trot in Austin, Texas, had people showing up when it had to go virtual to pick up their packet for their virtual race, and then showing registrations to another virtual event that was the Austin Turkey Trot. Now, I'm not saying that those people should rot in hell for doing that, but I do think as we have evolved and virtual is becoming more commonplace and is an alternative for these in-person events as well, I do think there is, you know, an inherent obligation to like modernize, you know, the way that you do business so that it remains ethical. And like, if no one was confused before, I don't love it. Because again, what was the tie to Austin? Like, the tie was SEO if you were based in Florida, right, and were doing that. But now if someone is showing up to another event and they think they registered for that event and they actually registered for you, yours, all right, you have an obligation to make sure that your marketing isn't misleading. Like, that's basic business practices. Don't mislead your customer. And I'm not saying that, like, you know, everyone is blameless in this. Again, shame on us for, on this side, for allowing this other business to crop up under our nose and be viable and serve customers that we should have been serving. But then also now, all right, let's make sure that folks who are operating in that virtual space are acting as ethical operators, which again, isn't saying, oh, go rot in hell. Let's just evolve our standards and understand what is and isn't okay. And, you know, make sure everyone's doing business the way that they should be. And if a virtual operator can develop an authentic tie in a community and put on a virtual event there that isn't misleading anyone away from trying to participate in a different virtual event there, more power to them. And we have seen some of that, I think, as well. But we've also seen some things living a little more across the line in that gray area and needing to evolve their practices.
Yes.
Am I being too diplomatic here, Tony?
No, I mean, it's legal. You can make money that way. But just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. And just because you do doesn't mean you're not a dick. Like, that's, it's a dick move. I don't, to put it bluntly, like, it's not cool.
But again, I don't think we're, as legacy events, blameless here in allowing this to crop up under our nose to do something that we should have been more forward thinking as virtual really became apparent that some people wanted to do it. Because it's not like virtual only started existing this year. Göteborgs Varvet, New York Roadrunners, some leading organizations have been doing things in this space, you know, tied to their in-person events or to serve a different part of the community for, you know, a period of a few years now. And then some of these other folks have developed SEO expertise and, you know, have allowed folks to basically buy swag, which, no shame in that. But then when they started doing it under our noses, because we weren't claiming that portion of our market, in our market, we got bent out of shape. But again, like, there's a little bit of shame on us for allowing that to happen right under our noses.
Well,
and not
I
being
think that's what I'm getting at, though. Like, that's my point. Before, it wasn't even like shame on us. It was just kind of like, I trust the people in the business. I trust the market. Like, it's very unlikely that someone's going to come and like take advantage of this. And in the cases that it does, there's very easy workarounds. Like, there's a reason it's youraustinmarathon.com and not austinmarathon.com, right? Someone squatted on the URL and then they wanted to, not egregious amount of money, but enough money where it's like, absolutely not. I'm not going to give you the benefit. I'm just going to change the URL. But like, stuff like that exists. And I get it. My lesson, I guess, or things, you know, to look forward to and look out for, rather, is just, I think the sense of community and camaraderie is going to fragment a little bit more than it has historically been.
Yeah, I think that is definitely something that we could see, right? Like that. And I mean, again, like, we sort of said this about virtual for like participants too, people being like, well, is virtual a real thing? Like, we don't get to be the gatekeepers anymore. And almost shame on us to a certain degree for having served as gatekeepers in certain ways that kept folks from not feeling included in the running community. And this actually speaks a little bit to something that I think is sort of my last thing that I want to leave it on is that, as we learned, which is like, running can't and shouldn't try to escape like these larger societal issues. Like, if we've been gatekeeping our events in ways that don't feel welcoming to diverse populations, if we have been thinking, oh, running can be a refuge and be somewhere where, you know, upper middle class white people don't have to deal with issues that other folks from other demographic groups can never escape. Or even at our organizations, our hiring practices in the workplaces we create, as New York Roadrunners saw, we're honky-dory. We say running is for everyone. We do good deeds in the community. We're nonprofits. If we think that that insulates us from larger societal issues that need to be addressed in like a holistic way by everyone, that if we want to talk ethical obligation, like, we all as human beings have an ethical obligation not to hide our heads in the sand about, we're missing the boat and missing it badly. And so I think a big thing that I learned this year is this, you know, idealized running community is great in a lot of ways, but needs to make sure that it is great and inclusive and, makes concerted efforts to be that in ways that help it live up to the own, like, its own standards and what it says it aspires to be, which is like this inclusive community that is for everyone. So I think that's been a big lesson learned for me. Now, that doesn't mean like throwing open the doors to shady business practices, but it does mean maybe, you know, potentially reevaluating, all right, like what, you know, are ways that we are doing our own business practices that are, whether they're shady or whether they're just imperfect or whether they're not inclusive, are things that we need to take a look at and say, how can I do that to make my events and make my organization and our workplace be what I say I want it to be?
I agree. And we'll wrap it up.
Is there any-
yeah, we'll wrap it up with mine, which is not every call has to be a video call. I think that's my that's my lesson learned. I jumped on a call with just a industry brand last week or a week or whatever, 10 days or so ago. And they're like, hey, I can't see you. It's like, well, it's a call. You know, it's not, why is everything a video call now? Like literally everything is expected to be a video call and it's exhausting. Some stuff doesn't have to be on video, man. I think that is the lesson for the year.
Nice. No, that is a good lesson. That is both industry specific and more general. So Tony, I think we wanted to, while those were lessons learned, and I think those are things we can take to heart. We're not just about the present here in this podcast. We're futurists. we really like to talk about where we think things are going, but I don't want to just talk about what we think is going to happen for the next year. I want to talk about, let's be hopeful. Let's talk about what we hope for the next year. As Kirsten Fleming would say, let's bring it up. So Tony, is there anything that you hope for the next year? And let's start really broad. Forget the industry or for the pod. Is there anything you hope for the next year, Tony, for the world?
Oh, world peace.
That's a high bar, man. That's more hopeful than I am. And I think that's more hopeful than you are too. I think
it's
sprung that on you.
Miss Congeniality line.
Yes.
Very, very great film. One of the top films. No, I mean, I honestly just hope that people are a little bit more forgiving in terms of just with each other, retailers, races, basically not so much keyboard warriors jump to conclusions, but more think through why certain stuff is happening or why in a specific example, like an event can't automatically refund you all your money or swap out your shirt that second or that day. Like, just understand the process of stuff a lot more would be something that I'd be very hopeful for from a world perspective.
Yeah. And I mean, that's not industry specific. That's everything. There are times I think I find myself as a consumer going, why can't X, Y, or Z? And then I take that step back and I go like, well, I'm not like a corporate apologist, but like there are times where I, in my own industry, I'm like, well, we can't do that for reasons that, it's a Salman Rushdie kid's book, Harun in the Sea of Stories. They talk about P2C2E, a process too complicated to explain. like, a lot of things, once they progress from a single idea to a business to an organization, develop like super inside baseball P2C2Es. And unless you fully know everything, you can't understand it. But like, you know, like some of those P2C2Es, whether in our industry or whether more broadly, I think are, I don't want to give like corporate carte blanche to hide behind, well, you're not on the inside, so you don't understand. But I do think that degree of understanding, not just like for corporations, but like to each other, like why someone might do or say or act in a certain way. I think that is really crucial. I think for the world, Tony, one of the big things that I would hope for the next year is for a peaceful transition of power for America's democracy. that's where I am. I'm not getting everything I want out of the Biden administration, but man, like a return to something that we can keep, that has enough of a baseline that's, you know, close to an unacceptable normal that we can keep pushing towards a better normal. That's what I'm going to say I'm hoping for the year. It's not world peace. It's a peaceful transition of power so we can actually get back to doing the work of trying to improve things rather than trying to, you know, prevent the house from burning down.
Go for it.
Yeah. What about for the industry? I think you alluded to this a little bit, but is there anything that you hope to see for the industry in 2021?
Man, a lot. I think this was the year that we rattled the cage and kind of, man, a lot of analogies, but I think the industry looked in the mirror for the first time this year in a very, very long time. We've been almost like the hermits out in the main woods, you know, that haven't really looked at ourselves or and kind of just kept to ourselves and done what we've always done. But everything from DEI to adopting tech, if I had to be very, very specific on what I'd be hopeful for the industry, I would hope that we start folding in a lot more of CRM. So start acting more like a industry of this decade rather than one of 10 decades ago. So adopting a lot of the stuff that formal businesses adopt, which is DEI training, consumer reports, actually going and looking at tech, improving ourselves one way, shape, or another, and just really acting more like organizations than a group of friends that happen to produce an event. Does that make sense?
It does. But to me, what you said that is most important is you talked about hermits in the main woods. And are you referring to a specific hermit, Tony? Like the one that we had like news stories about a few years ago, Chris Knight?
Yeah, I'm reading the book right now. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to totally sidebar us for a second. So I went to summer camp very near where he was found. And we had an island in the middle of our lake. And the legend was that the hermit lived on the island. And then this guy was found, caught, and people would tell stories about like, oh yeah, the locals say like there's, you know, all these break-ins and, you know, there are other summer camps that get broken into. And it was this legend, like kids would go for a camp out on the island on the lake and you'd tell them the legend of the hermit. And then they caught this guy breaking into the kitchen of a summer camp.
Correct.
And it was real. Yeah. And he had been living alone in the Maine woods for 27 years. And he's like the last hermit. And I read that book and it is incredible. So everyone, we're going to post a link to the story of the North Pond Hermit and know that like for all intents and purposes, this guy was like my buddy growing up because he like probably broke into my summer camp kitchen. So yeah, that's the most important takeaway there. And also like maybe the takeaway is like, you know, being a hermit seems like it's pretty appealing in some ways sometimes right now. For me, for the industry, what I would say, it really is very similar to yours, is I was hoping that things that we were forced to do now, we don't forget to do in the future. That reflectiveness, that consideration to get better, that consideration about what we can do to be more inclusive. We as an industry, again, have been forced to do certain things, and it's really easy to revert to an easy way to do things. That's because it's easy. But I think what we need to do is take that hard look at ourselves and say, all right, what are the things that we were forced to do now that we really should be continuing to do in the future? And like, what's the thing that a lot of operations people kind of say, well, like, who's going to do that? How are we going to do that? That means like we as an industry are going to need to consider dedicating resources to some of these efforts in ways that I think a lot of the time we might have gone, well, that's not a part of our mission. But it's like, well, no, that is a part of our mission, making sure that running is more accessible to all, whether that's through virtual events and keeping them affordable, whether that's through, you know, hiring practices, making sure that industry is accepting of folks who come from different backgrounds and have different viewpoints. Like all these things that we've said we're going to do and been taking hard looks at ourselves about and putting statements out about, it's like, let's make sure we don't forget it just because we come through a pandemic at some point in 2021. Let's make sure that we as an industry are aspiring to live up to our own stated goals and standards and not leave the efforts of doing that back at a time where we were forced to try and do that.
Yep, I agree and correct. So we got to keep doing what we're doing, but do it better because hopefully gotcha. There'll be less barriers, you know, down the line than there are now.
Yeah. And so, Tone, we've been like zeroing in. We went from the world to the industry. What do you hope for the pod next year in 2021? This is the last thing I want to cover. What are your hopes and dreams for the ECT pod 2021? Let's talk a little bit about what we're trying to do like next year. Schedules, sponsors, whatever. What are your hopes? Just listen to our pod planning meeting, people.
Yeah, I want more people to listen. Yeah, I think right now we have a really, really good niche audience from a operations and race industry. I think it'd be very cool to start getting runners as listeners just so they can see a little bit behind the door. And that goes into what do I want to see from the world, right? So understanding like all the work that goes into getting even the most generic food in the walk-off, or why do we run out of medals sometimes? Well, because every relay member took a medal at the finish because they decided to break into the course and finish as a team. You know, I want runners to know more about the industry so we can treat this as an educational podcast for them, as well as a forward-thinking podcast for people within the industry. That's one thing.
I love that. And I think I can help facilitate that goal, Tony. I'm going on the Strength Running Podcast, a very popular running podcast. I don't know when the episode's going to drop, but I have the interview scheduled for the next couple days here. And you better believe that I'll be plugging the pod, and it reaches not just this little corner of the world, but a broader array of folks out there who are, you know, general running population. So yeah, no, I'm going to help you live your dreams, Tony.
Perfect.
Live our dreams by expanding the listenership to the, you know, thousands of people, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, let's call it millions, listening to one of the top ranked running podcasts, and also help you achieve your dream of folks understanding better. Because, you know, the reason I'm going on is he said, hey, I want to understand what goes on in putting on large events. So super excited for that. For me, for the pod, Tone, what I hope for is that we can establish a regular schedule, and I'm going to pitch every other week. We might adjust it occasionally around holidays or whatever, but basically, we put out a lot of episodes this year. We kind of tried a couple different schedules, and these last couple months, as we've gone to these two episodes a month schedule, that's where I want us to land. And I'm willing to round up a little bit from that. Two episodes a month. Well, every other week, that's 26, you know, that's, you know, one in a couple, you know, when we have those weeks where we have three Thursdays or what have you. But what I hope for the pod is we find a regular schedule. I'm pitching every other week. And again, we'll adjust for holidays and certain things, and maybe even do an occasional like emergency pod. Hey, here's big news. Here's something we need to cover. Fine. Let's pop on and record a, you know, 29-minute episode rather than this hour long that a lot of these are. But finding a regular schedule, because, as I alluded to earlier, this podcast has been a lot of work. It's been a lot of fun. I've been really glad to do it with you. And I want to keep doing it. But I think a part of doing that is, you know, finding that sustainable niche in our lives where we can sustain it, which to me would be every other week. So how do you feel about that, Tone? Going every other week next year, standard, set it in stone, write it on tablets and bring it down from the mountaintop.
I love it. That means I don't have to edit every single week. flip side of that, too, it helps us with content a little bit more. And this is to say, I don't think we've ever jumped on an episode and said we need content. I feel like we've had stuff to speak about every single time we get up and record, but maybe less episodes means more quality content rather. Not to say again that anything has been bad up to this point, but man, that's a lot of episodes. What are we at, like 30 or something for the year?
Yeah, I think this will be episode 29, which is actually 30. I know something I learned this year that I didn't bring up. Don't title one of the episodes of your podcast episode zero, because it will screw you up.
Yep.
As to keeping track of what episode you're on, like we did in our introduction episode. So when we start season two, we're going to start with episode one in season two next January when we come back from the holiday break, because we have learned important lessons about like how to name and number your podcast episodes.
Fair.
I'll also say, Tony, I hope we can pick up a little bit of sponsorship. You know, you're allowed to spend money on a hobby, but again, our patient wives, you know, have let us invest, you know, both time and money in this project. And, you know, I'd like to, maybe have it slightly underwritten in a certain way that allows us to continue. This is our pledge drive to continue producing the quality content that you rely on. So if you're out there, if you got are trying to reach industry decision makers, you know where to find us, earlycalltimepod@gmail.com. Reach out. We'll be highly flexible. But yeah, I think that's a hope I have for the pod, is basically the whole goal all along has been to become SponCon. Right. I mean, that's where the money is.
Well, obviously, to underwrite it.
Yeah.
You put it very well. We have a lot of decision makers that listen to the podcast. So if you're a brand that wants to expand into the running market, if you're trying to develop a new line of apparel or get that apparel in someone's hands, if you work in shipping and logistics at one of the major companies that's absolutely booming right now, but maybe you want to get in on this packet mailing, box shipping aspect of it and the service that you offer. Or, you know, we need someone to ship our microphone around the world to our guests so we have more consistent audio content. That's probably one thing that I really hope for next year. Yes. By no fault of our guests, I think we were learning as we were going. So we had some great, great content. Often times that audio would drop or it really wouldn't sound great. So I think doors wide open from a partnership perspective, and there's plenty of reasons on why I think we're a good candidate for that. But also it's about just improving the podcast as it exists. So the schedule, the recording methods, hopefully the editing. And I think if you listen to episode zero and you listen to this one, they sound like totally different podcasts, you know, in terms of how they're produced, what they sound like, what they feel like with the content, how comfortable we are on the mic. So I think just continue to evolve is was one big thing for us.
Yeah. And I think that's a good place to leave this. Tone, thanks for evolving with me this year. I have, while there have been times we've been recording at weird hours or, you know, posting and editing at weird hours, doing all that work that does go into this pod, I have immensely enjoyed producing this podcast with you over the past year. So thanks for that, buddy. I really appreciate it.
Likewise. Always brightens my day to speak with you, Eli.
Yeah. And that's a wrap for this episode and this first season of Early Call Time, the podcast where we discuss issues and news in the road race industry and get to know some of the people who keep it running. If you enjoyed the episode or the whole first season, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere where you get your podcasts. If you have any questions, comments, or guests you would like us to invite once we return in the new year for season two, please send us an email at earlycalltimepod@gmail.com. Thanks so much to all of you for listening to this first season. We'll catch you bright and early on the next episode of Early Call Time after the new year.
If organizing running events is your job, join Tony and Eli and all their friends on the Early Call Time Pod.